let's talk about the polling before we take some questions.
So
there's now a bunch of polls. Now this is like the third or fourth one I've seen. But it's only been, we're now in week four of the war. Most Iranians already say it was a mistake, 59%. That means that includes a significant number of registered Republicans. 61% approve of Trump's handling of the war. And this part is fascinating. More Americans currently say that the U.S. is losing than winning. You know, so much winning, we can hardly stand it. 45% say the U.S. is losing, 25% say it's winning, and I guess the rest don't have an opinion about it or don't think it's either way. John, these are numbers that you don't usually see until years into an unpopular conflict.
And I'll add something. In today's, I think it was the Times. Let me look real quick. It's the Times. So there were classified briefings on Capitol Hill yesterday. Mike Rogers, the chairman of the Armed Services Committee in the House, came out of one of the briefings and said that the Pentagon had failed to provide even the most basic details about the scope and direction of the war. And he says, quote, "We want to know more about what's going on, and we're just not getting answers." On the other side of Capitol Hill, Roger Wicker, the senator from Mississippi who chairs the Senate Armed Services Committee, said, let me put it this way. He was talking about Mike Rogers. Let me put it this way. I can see why he said that. These are not just senior Republicans, Ted. These are the senior Republicans that are supposed to be helping the Pentagon prosecute the war. And they're coming out and saying publicly, we have no idea why we're at war. The Pentagon has no plan either to fight the war or to get us out of the war. We don't know what's going on. So if Republicans on Capitol Hill don't know what's going on, how in the world are the American people going to support a conflict like this? This is one. Listen, when I was at the CIA, we went through Afghanistan. We went through Iraq. We went through Somalia, we went through, you know, Panama and Grenada and all these other places. There was always an explanation for why we were doing what we were doing, even if the explanation was specious. Here, there's not even an explanation.
Well, we've gotten, you know, conflating. It reminds me a little bit of Afghanistan in the early days, right? First it was like, well, we have to find Osama bin Laden, although there was considerable evidence he was in Pakistan. Then it was like, okay, well, we have to make sure Afghanistan never becomes a hotbed of Islamic terrorism again, or has any training camps, although it really hardly had any training camps by 9/11. Those were mostly in Pakistan too. And then it became, well, we have to stand up this government that we've, you know, installed, for some reason. Then it became like, we're going to liberate Afghan women. It just kept changing. And then it was like, oh, the government's that we installed is really corrupt. We have to show them to be less corrupt. Then we have in 20 years and it never got better.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
John, you were part of this infrastructure for many years. Who's in charge? Is it the DOD? Is it CIA? Is it someone else? Who's
in charge? DOD. CIA is a policy support organization. So state, NSC, and DOD come up with the policy, and the CIA supports it, whatever it is. Yesterday on my TV show, Deep State, I had to stop and think of everything begins with a D in my life. Deep State. I interviewed Judge Andrew Napolitano about this very issue. And I said, Judge Napolitano, you co-hosted a TV show on Fox every day for 10 years with Pete Hegseth. I said, what do you think of Pete Hegseth's performance as Secretary of Defense? And he said, Pete Hegseth is an incompetent boob and a serial killer. He's a nice guy, he says, but he's an incompetent boob and a serial killer.
What does he mean by serial killer?
Well, I asked him because I thought he was talking about Iran. He was talking about these so-called drug boats where he's just murdering people wantonly. Half of them are fishermen, innocent fishermen trying to make a living, just murdering them or blowing up the boat. And if somebody survives, you circle the drone back and you blow them up again. And it's just murder. There's no other way to describe it.
It's gratuitous.
It is. It's gratuitous.
So, I mean, normally, war aims come out of the DOD. Yeah. I mean, look, that's a big ass building. I haven't been inside, but I've seen the outside. How many, I mean, there must be like whole departments who are charged with, you know, coming up with and articulating war aims. I mean, we all know historically they have historians working at DOD. I mean, that this is a requirement for successful conflict. You have to have a clear set of objectives.
You have to.
Otherwise, you know, the military loses. There's mission creep. You lose track of what you were trying to do. And you can't communicate to the public whose support you need. What's going on here? Why don't we have the? Why aren't these people, are they not being given the assignments? Are they too, do they not know how to do the assignments?
This is the change in American politics, where instead of having three co-equal branches of government, we have the executive, and then Congress is somehow subservient to the executive. You know, when Jimmy Carter was president, Tip O'Neill, although he was a Democrat, was as much of a problem for Jimmy Carter as the courts were, because Tip O'Neill recognized that Congress was a co-equal branch of government. And here we've got, you know, whether there's a Democrat in the White House and Democrats run the House and the Senate, or a Republican in the White House and Republicans run the House and the Senate, they see themselves as existing for the purpose of supporting the president and ensuring that his policies are enacted into law. And that's just not at all what the founding fathers intended.
No, it's not. And frankly, it's not a good idea to break in this respect with what
bad policy, very bad policy.
Yeah. The founders were wise in that respect. One last question before we go to some questions, John, unless you want to keep talking. Karg Island, that all eyes are on Karg Island. That seems to be like the, you know, where the administration wants to pin all of their hopes. I would say odds are better than 50% that the United States is going to try to bomb and then capture it and then claim that that's some sort of win. But then bodies are going to start coming home. You agree that we're likely to do that?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I think that's the case. And, you know, it's a miracle so far, Ted, that what they're telling us is that only 13 Americans have died. Mm-hmm. If that's true, and I think it's probably not, we're very lucky.
And who knows how many Israelis have died?
Yeah, because they won't tell us. That's highly classified, that is. To the point where if any reporter reveals it, they face 10 years in prison.
Is that true about foreign reporters as well?
Yes.
So if you're working for CNN and you're in Tel Aviv, you could face prison time. That's right.
And that's why when CNN reports, it says in the corner of the screen, cleared by Israeli censors.
They should just boycott Israel. I would literally, as a journalist, never report from there just based on that. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I would boycott it.
There's no point. No. I mean, there's just no point.
I would boycott it.
Want to support the show with style? Go to deprogram.live and check out our merch. That's deprogram.live, or check out the description below. Thanks for watching.
There's a piece in the Washington Post today that, you know, just kind of just lays it all out that the Gulf countries want the war to end, but not yet. They want the war to end after we blast the Iranians some more and make them weaker so that they offer up more concessions. Mm. And my view is not cool, you know, not cool at all. But that was also the feeling that I got the last time I was in Dubai, that they wanted to make sure that Iran can never pose a threat to them, which is funny because they have a few million people and Iran has 92 or 93 million people. And it would also account for the comment that Mohammed bin Salman made when he was coming out of the White House the other day, that he wants the United States to just destroy Iran. And so where public opinion, and we've been talking about this a lot on the show, where public opinion here in the United States is such that we don't want to fight this war, this was a war of choice, our Gulf allies now are saying, well, you started this, you've got to finish it, and you've got to finish it in a big way. So I think there won't be any quick end to the war.
Oh, there certainly won't be a quick end. I mean, we've seen that in the there's a chasm wider than the Grand Canyon separating the negotiating positions. The Iranians are basically like, you apologize, you make reparations, you promise to never, ever attack us ever again in perpetuity. Meanwhile, we're like, give up all your nuclear stuff, stop supporting Hezbollah and Hamas. Yeah. The Iranians are saying, you stop messing around with Hezbollah and Hamas. It's like, couldn't be further apart. John, isn't it like a completely let's set aside like the not cool thing. Isn't it kind of objectively impossible to make for the Gulf states to say to for there to be a position where Iran would never pose a theoretical threat?
Not possible. Not possible unless you work for the American Enterprise Institute, in which case you have already come up with plans. You have already drawn up a map that shows Iran being broken into five or six small countries. That's even the neocon goal.
But even so, one of those, I mean, that in that degree of instability, sort of like a Balkanization of Iran into like sort of a post-Yugoslavia type situation.
Yeah.
I mean, one or more of those, rump states could still pose a threat to its neighbors. Those weapons would still, that used to belong to the Islamic Republic of Iran would belong to the new Republic of Kurdistan or whatever. I mean, it's not like that stuff goes away. All you're doing is fracturing. You're not, unless you kill all 92 million Iranians, you're not going to eliminate the threat from Iran. You have to, these are the people, exactly this is right. The neighborhood you live in. You live in the, you have to get along with them.
Yeah, that's the bottom line. You're going to have to figure something out because conflict isn't going to solve anything. It's just going to make it worse.
I mean, that's
and in the meantime, right? Israel this morning announced that it had killed the commander of the Iranian Navy, and somehow magically that is supposed to open up the Strait of Hormuz. They actually said that. We killed the head of the Navy, so now the Strait of Hormuz is going to open. It's like, what? How do you figure that?
Because there's only one person who runs the Iranian Navy, and now it's all over, and they're all going to basically go, does not compute, we cannot do Navy stuff anymore.
Ridiculous.
I mean, the thing is, historically, when you kill, when you degrade a regime, when you bomb a regime, they tend to harden and they tend to become more radicalized and more militant and more defiant.
That is exactly right.